This is a Pinball News production.
To get into it, first of all, let me explain. My name is Ed Nichols, and I started some time ago collecting basically games. And I got involved with the American Game and Puzzle Collectors Association. And subsequently, I'm now on their board of directors. I got involved with board games to start off with, and baseball games. And then I came across some weird-looking games that had shooters on them. And got involved and started collecting them like crazy. But before I begin, all my other logs is doing videos. And I got a grant to do a video on pinball. And we accomplished this a few years ago. And I want to show you the first part of the video because it details the first part of history of where the Bagatelles came from. You want to go ahead and show that one?
Yeah. Yep.
It's thrilling. It's exciting. Try your luck. Bring it quickly. Every game is different. It has no equal.
For over 70 years, pinball has excited players with a combination of flashing lights and fast-moving action. It transcends players into a world of superheroes, magical games, popular musicals, and movies. You can hardly resist playing. You can hardly resist the fascination. You can hardly resist pinball.
Pinball probably has its roots from a French game called Palmai, fashioned after the game of bowls, the widely played game of ancient Egypt. Palmai used crudely fashioned mallets in order to whack the wooden balls through hoops, similar to today's game of croquet. It was quite a popular game in France during the 14th and 15th centuries. However, the French climate was not always conducive to playing Palmai year-round. So, the game was brought indoors and changed.
The new indoor game was called billiards, derived from the French word bijard, the name for one of the wooden sticks used to play this new game, and was played on a flat wooden table, usually painted white or covered with a green cloth so as to resemble grass. Simple vertical walls were attached to the board to keep the balls from rolling off the table. And because these walls seemed to resemble the French riverbanks, they were sometimes referred to as banks. Originally, balls were shoved with wooden sticks called bases. But when a ball came to lie close to a bank, it was nearly impossible to use the mace. So players would turn the mace around and use the handle, or cue, meaning tail, to strike the ball. While early billiard tables had arches or wickets for targets, later tables featured pockets.
As the billiard table was evolving, so too was a mill game, Bagatelle. Like Palmai and billiards, Bagatelle had its roots in France as well. Bagatelle is a combination of billiards and another game that had its roots from bowls, nine holes. Like billiards, this new game was played on a table, but unlike billiards, the Bagatelle table was slanted so as to allow gravity to return the ball to the shooter. Also, all players would shoot from the lower end of the table toward a target area located at the higher end. Bagatelle utilized sticks and balls very similar to billiards. The targets, originally, were nine pins, such as those used in the nine-pin scale, and they were usually placed in a specific pattern the target end of the table. Sometimes arches and wickets were used so as to increase the challenge of the game. A player would have a turn and attempt to knock down the pins. Knocked down pins would be reset for the next play.
Okay, we're going to turn it off because we're starting to get into where pinball actually came from and started my lecture, basically. What you see here is basically what I showed there is where it came from. It came from the French, and as Dick Buchel says in his book, it came probably to the United States via the French during our revolution, where they bought all the bagatelle games and it found itself here in the United States. I'll go to the next slide. In his book, he describes bagatelle as a generic description of virtually all inclined playfield table games with archback ball returns. The more and more I get into bagatelle, the more and more I've collected these. I honestly really don't know what a bagatelle is anymore and what a pinball is. And I think when you get through here, you might have that same opinion. This particular table is from the 1800s. It's not in my collection. However, it was at an antique store that I found in St. Louis, and I did shoot it when I was doing the film, and it does show itself in the film. This is a nine-hole game. After pins were used, they basically scooped those nine holes out, and you would hit from one end of the table and try and get the highest score, with nine being in the middle. Supposedly, there was they figured out scientifically that the holes had different value on how hard it was to get into those holes. I'm not so sure later on that that really held true because I see some scoring all over the place on some of these bagatelles. This bagatelle is a folding up bagatelle. It's an English bagatelle from the late 1800s. This particular game is up here on the table if you want to see it later on. It folds up to score, and in many cases, it's a nine-hole game itself, and it was played that way. The cues that you see with the game are just cues I put in here, not indigenous to the game. More likely, they had actual pool cues that were long, much like you see on a billiard table today, to play the game. What's interesting here is it does have, it's arched very slightly. When you look at the game, you can see that you do shoot the ball uphill to the targets, and then it does return itself back to you. It's an interesting game. I've only played it about once. I need some restoration on it. I don't think it needs to be painted. In this case, it needs some felt put on it, but for all practical purposes, these games are really kind of neat, and while you think I'd love to display this with all I have, many like you, it pretty well stays closed up in a box somewhere, and we get it out occasionally to play it. We'll talk about the Chinese bagatelle, but before this, I want to tell you what is happening in the United States right about the mid-1800s. What you see is there's an influx of bagatelle being played in about the mid-1800s, primarily up in the east and east coast and east area. And what you see is the end of the Civil War. At the end of the Civil War, there were really two games going on. One, we had pool and bagatelle being played in pubs, etc. And what we had outside was a new game that had been formed called baseball. And baseball was spelled B-A-S-E, no ball, there's space ball, B-A-L-L. And that didn't occur when baseball became one word until right about the First World War, for those of you that are historians on that. And there is an influence that when I show you one of these shots later on, why I bring that up. But what happened was this new game, and also the fact that at that particular time, we saw people moving inside and a lot of buildings being built with what was called parlors. Rooms specifically, much like our game room today, where somebody would come to the house and visit, or the family would get together And they would play a game of some sort in there. And in this particular point in time, we see a lot of toy manufacturers, et cetera, and game manufacturers cropping up across the United States and elsewhere. And all of a sudden, you see printing. For those of you who know about printing, at this particular time, they can print one color with stone, and then the colors were added with dyes and paints, etc., to give you the vivid look that was on these particular bagatelles or games at that time. This particular game became very popular and got flooded in the United States in right at that time, the late 1860s. Around 1869, we see it. And this is the French Chinese bagatelle. They were printed on the paper, and then everything was applied after the paper was laminated to the board. This particular one shows a person playing bagatelle on the upper corner of it. It's also a Tivoli bagatelle because the way the game was played, you'd shoot the ball up to a little point up in the top part of the circle. You'll see like a little hole up there where a ball was placed there. And the object was to hit that ball, knock it out, and both balls then would score down the board. Also, you'll note on this one, and I bring it up because you see this happening later on. I'm going to show you some influence of this game and games like this on games later on. Note the position of the holes that you see on the play field and the nails, etc. And then again, also at the bottom, where the scoring was on the bottom. Supposedly in the bottom, the middle would be the highest score with the scores off to the side being lower. However, later bagatelles, and even this one, doesn't show that happening. These Chinese bagatelles came in all different flavors, so to speak. And they were all had basic, same play field, as not unlike some of the early pinball games or even pinball games you have today, I believe. But the decorations on them were outstanding. If you look at the graphic artwork that was done, when you consider the time, this is late 1860s, maybe into the early 1870s. I show a close-up on the side of that particular pattern that we see going on. And for those of you that are already jumping ahead, you see that pattern come up quite sometimes much later than the 1868s. Here's a mid-1800 bagatelle. It's not, I don't believe it to be a red grape because of the shooter. And note the shooter there has got a little bit different shooter where a little pin's going through to pull it out. Again, you start to see bells and all kinds of little things going on to the play field. This is one of the first spring-loaded plungers, but you also, one of the things when I was looking through, too, and Michael Gottlieb was here last night. I don't know how many of you got to see him last night, but he was talking about baseball games and the fact that Gottlieb couldn't get a patent on the cover because of baseball games. Well, the first baseball game, which happened in about the 1868, the Siebling baseball game, had a plunger shooter on it, and it had a bat that the person would hit the ball with down at the batter's or home plate area. And so baseball basically had that flipper going on way back in 1868 in their very first game. However, the flipper, as far as you know, in a baseball game, the most I guess the Mona Lisa of baseball games is the Zimmer game, if any of you know that game. It's a bagatelle, basically, type where the pitching area is where a shooter is, and it shoots towards a bat that you move your hand to hit the ball onto the play field, and I'll show you something similar to it. But the Zimmer game is only about 11 or 13 in existence that they know, and I've seen two of them in Cooperstown, so... In 1870, 1871, you see a guy named Montague Redgrave, who was basically a toy manufacturer. And this is what was happening at this time. Toy manufacturers We're getting into this new game with Bring Them Home. You have the Chinese bagatelles, which were out there and starting to flood the market. And these guys sell them like any marketer. I can get a game in to sell, I'm going to do it. And Redgrave just did a little bit, something a little bit different. He had this spring-loaded plunger, and he also covered it with a brass or wooden plate, which he stamped in it his patent date, 1870 in it. This particular game I do have up here, which you can see. I did bring it with me. It's interesting, the little stars, the bells, etc. They start put things on it. Most everybody did this to try and get people to buy the units. They changed them around, made them a little bit different. This particular game had a field covered with felt. He covered his fields with usually something like leather or not necessarily did he cover them with paper. I don't believe he covered any of them paper. And it was quite interesting because at this particular time, too, all the toy manufacturers were trying to get into this new game called Bagatelle. And what he did by patenting that shooter, he kept a lot of them from getting on the market right away until we get to J.S. Singer, who did a little, few little things, too. But this particular plunger, one of the drawbacks to it was you could not see the ball when you shot it, so you had to kind of judge. Also, before this, all the bagatelles had clay marbles. Obviously, the clay marbles, if you noticed in the film, one of the marbles didn't go down all the way. Well, the clay marbles weren't particularly all rounded. They were kind of all square, and if you have any of them, you know what I'm talking about. But when you put that plunger on there, because of the force hitting those clay marbles, a lot of them started to shatter. So now we saw an input of marbles that were coming from Germany. This is a parlor bagatelle from Redgrave that we see in the later 1800s. This particular one was a very heavy game, and it was designed to be put on a table and play. This game was the size of probably your modern pinball game, practically, except for the back glass. And it took up the whole dining room table when it was put down. On the back of it, it had a little slant that would tilt it up, had ladders and all kinds of little things going on. And there's brass numbers on there to tell you how much you scored. It's kind of rare to find these ones in any good shape, to be truthful. Even this one's kind of warped and doesn't play real well because of being warped. On all of Redgrave's, we usually put, as they usually put, his little signature on the back, which you see right there to the left. I'm telling you how to play the game. He put that on, I believe, all of his games, or most of them, except for the ones he later on sold under other names. These are a couple that we see from the mid, I guess, 1880s, basically. There's no date on them. The inlaid Tivoli Bagatelle on the left is one of the most beautiful games I've come across, and all wood because of the way it's done. Also note where all the holes are again and how it looks so much like the Chinese bagatelle we saw that paper laid down. Haven't really changed even where the pins are. And if you looked at Dennis's bagatelle, that's Dennis Dodo in the film that you saw in the first part of that film, that was his bagatelle where you saw on the playfield, it had the same kind of look to it and feel, only at a larger size. But these were made primarily for the home and being used in a parlor. The one next to it is a two-shooter. Actually, you shot two marbles at the same time. They would go up to the top, hit one another, and then progress back down to your right or left into the playfield. And notice those five holes again. Basically, the arrangement is kind of the same on either side of that two-shooter bagatelle. As far as being a fun game to play, the two-shooter is kind of a fun game to play and get the score from it because you never know where those two marbles are going to end up once they collide up at the top. And it's not suggested with that game to play with clay marbles. They really shattered, believe me. I think I did play with clay marbles once this season, and I did get them breaking up. In 1889, I saw Jasper Singer come on with his Cuckoo Bagatelle. And this was the first one with a actually with a shooter, and the shooter's missing on this particular one, that utilized the new printing technique where they could print four color now. And he printed this and laid it down on the wood, laminated to it, and then, of course, stuck his other things on there. But one of the things is in the middle, you see four dots there. That's the place like four counters or coins or whatever. And if you hit those and move them, you can move them into a spot where you gain more points. One of the things about the Cuckoo was this was the first, Jasper H. Singer, the first patented feature to a play field. His spinner was patented, and basically that's where that whole spinner came from at this particular point in time. When a ball hit it, it moved the spinner, giving you some more points, some points, whatever it may be. It could be zero, it could be one, two, three, depending upon how you move the spinner. Also, I think in this particular one, I believe it's Moby Dick is what it is up there, the graphics up at the top. And again, for those of you who like graphics on some of these things, this is a beautiful piece. This is a smaller Cuckoo Bagatelle. They came in all sizes, just like the Chinese Bagatelle I showed you up front. They came in all different sizes, so you could buy any size you wanted, depending upon how much you want to spend, I guess. Again, we see a close-up of the spinner on it, and I believe for a singer, this was quite a movement for him, but all his games in the 1880, regardless whether it be the Bagatelle game or his card games, his board games, etc., the graphics on them are beautiful. They rival McLaughlin games. Now, McLaughlin really didn't get in the Bagatelle. However, they did make a weird sort of Bagatelle, called a couple of their games Bagatelle, but you moved a counter and had to roll with dice and things like that. It was kind of a weird game. But it wasn't where there was a shooter. They just called them a Bagatelle. But during this period, probably the two big game makers in the United States were the J.S. Singer and McLaughlin. And they had beautiful graphics, which was their biggest seller. And today, those games, the Singer games and McLaughlin games, are the ones that get the highest amount of money as far as when somebody's purchasing them. The Zimmer game happens to be a McLaughlin game. Also, a note, at this particular time, Singer did a little trade with Redgrave, and they kind of traded their go to the next slide. You'll notice they traded. He wanted to get that spring-loaded plunger on his game, so he kind of traded what to do with Redgrave, and he gave Redgrave the rights to use his little spinner up at the top. So they had a little trade going on, and as Harold Baldy, who's here today, was telling me too, that they traded all these things, and later on, when Redgrave and was semi doing pinballs for or Bagatelles for other people, he was doing them for Milton Bradley and for Parker Brothers and all those other places. And it was hard to tell who really put these together, whether it was a Redgrave or whether it was Singer or whether it was a Singer game or a Redgrave game, because of the fact that they intertwined their two things that they both had patents on. Also, during the 1800s, we saw this Dropbox. And one of the things that was going on in the 1800s, those of you that collect coin-operated games know that there were a lot of these games where if you wanted to buy a cigar, you put a penny on a slot and went down to the bottom, and you got maybe one cigar or two cigars or no cigars. Mostly, I think you got a cigar. the kind of takeoff on that was this sort of box where at the top right, you drop a ball, it'd go down the ramp, and it would come onto the play field, and then you would score points by doing that. These boxes were folded up and were kind of neat, and we see later on in the early 1900s where these become kind of like gambling devices, and we see a whole richness of some of these games coming on. I think, you see this even in some of the pinball games, this sort of drop box of a ball coming down and things like that maybe coming onto the play field. But also, it picked up on their actual play field. Note again the positioning of the five holes on this particular one. This was the one that got me. I picked this up a couple of years ago, I think it is now. And I read Bichel's book, and he said pinball didn't come about the name until it was official. And here I picked up this game that obviously is in the late 1800s, early maybe 1900s at the most, since there's no date on it. The fact that pin and ball are separated, and here's the name pinball right on the game. I started wondering myself, where is pinball, what is bagatelle, what's happening? And this doesn't really fit what you call a pinball game because it's a drop ball. You drop the marble up at the top and one of the several holes at the top, and where it goes down and gets caught, or if it goes down to the bottom and falls into one of those holes, you score points that way. I would have brought this one, and Dennis asked me if I was going to bring it, and I said, I might have, but it was probably one of the most fragile games I've got in my collection, and I didn't want to bring it. I did bring a clown sort of drop ball with me to set up. I just didn't set up yet, that you can take a look at later on. It's from the late 1800s. I think this is a very unusual game, and it's all paper applied to the wood, and there were a lot of different games that were kind of like that in the late 1800s. There was also a little large flounder game. It used kind of like rings that you would flip onto a play field, and if it got caught on the top, you scored points, or the rings fell down on the play field, and you also scored. But all these games kind of came around that late 1800s. So it leads me to believe this is probably a late 1800s game. In 1889, I bring this. This is a bagatelle baseball game from 1889 by the Nash Company out of Boston. The reason I brought it was it's kind of a rare game in baseball games, but also the plunger. Note on the side, the little ring there, that was not indigenous to it. Somebody else put that on or haven't taken it off simply because the way the plunger works is there's a rubber band that's attached to the backside of it and it comes to the top and is put in with a nail at the top. And the original rubber band is all rotten out and not there anymore. And one needs to be put in there. And that would hold the plunger up and there'd be no need for this little metal thing down there to keep the plunger from falling out of its groove there. Once the rubber band is put in there, you wouldn't need that. But it's kind of a neat little with the bell, et cetera, and everything like that. But here's somebody getting around that patent with a little weird with a rubber band. I had not seen this on a game, especially at that time. This is one of the first baseball ones that's a pure, I should say, bagatelle, and not with a bat on it. There were a couple other ones that were out there as well, a little bit before, but this was one of the first baseball ones. Here's some early, the one on the right, I believe it is Milton Bradley, which is probably a singer or Redgrave type creation. But also notice all these bagatelles keep repeating that same pattern with the holes, etc., and where things are on the play field. Evidently, somebody knew something because they all keep repeating that. And if anybody wanted to patent something, I think I'd have patented that so nobody had that. But I think you see that today, even where things are on the playfield, tend to be identical to another game. There were a bunch of box games that were out there. And this particular one was the nine-hole game that was called Moto Bagatelle. And the directions are exactly how you play whether you're a nine-hole bagatelle. They were to play marbles, and they contained a little stick, which is on the left-hand side there, and a little line that was drawn on there to show you where you hit your balls from. Again, this was probably the late 1800s, maybe right into 1900. This was a takeoff of a theme. At that time, the Japanese flag, I don't think it would have come later on, but at this particular point in time, you see the colorful graphics that are created on the playfield. And I think you see this happening for those of you that study that early game called Ballyhoo. You see the colorful playfield, which sold millions of copies of it. I mean, it wasn't millions at the time, I forget the exact number, but the playfield being that graphic, something that pops out, people want to buy. Here we see, and I get into a few baseball. Here we see that Dropbox thing. It was in, this one particularly is in 1913. The game on the right was made in New York, and the game on the left was made in San Francisco. One was a green box, and one had a kind of a brownish box. But basically, you dropped the ball in at the top. It went down through a series of nails or prongs. They're not really nails there. And at the bottom, it told you whether you got a home run, a double, or whatever it may be, with obviously the home run being right in the middle. And utilize all that. The play field down at the bottom is basically where you can move your people and record strikes, balls, and whatever it may be. Interesting thing about this, especially one on the left, it was a giveaway at a shoe store from what was on it. And many of these games were giveaways, much like they are kind of today, the little bagatelles being given away, etc. Are free giveaways of something that quote unquote is cheap. I don't know if these were that cheap even then, but here we see some other early baseball games. The one on the left is probably right at the early 1900s. It's basically your basic bagatelle with the shooter being spring-loaded, covered in wood. There was no date on that particular one. I'm assuming it's probably the very early 1900s. The fireside baseball was in 1929, and that one had the bat, the jacks are swung. You would shoot the ball up at the top by a pitcher actually moving it with their finger. And there used to be kind of a net to catch the ball on the back, but it's not there anymore. The other one, the arcade. Arcade built a bunch of these bagatelles in the mid-1920s. If you look at them, they all kind of resemble the same theme on arcade. The baseball one had the baseball playing field, and later on they basically put out baseball one with a little facsimile of Babe Ruth at the top to sell a few more games. The shooter on that one too, I forgot. If you look at the arcade shooter, it's kind of a weird type spring-loaded shooter. These two are probably more what Gottlieb was talking about, Michael was talking about last night. The one on the left is a Caroon bagatelle. There was a chute that was at the pitcher's mound. And at the home plate, there was a bat that somebody was holding at the ball, and it would be caught by the catchers out in the field. There were quite a number of games that were basically fashioned after this in the early 1900s through the 1920s, and the one on the right is supposedly in the 1930s, and I think that may be early 30s, even though Mark Cooper's book, he has it in the late 30s. But they're very similar in what they look like, except for in the one on the right, the shooter is a little thing of a spring-loaded plunger that you pull back and shoot the ball. The one on the left, the Caroon, is 1904. And in most cases of my research on it with the Caroon people, this is one of the rarer ones. And according to the people there, they have not seen one with the shooter. It's only with pictures of it. Evidently, it was something that was picked up and you're able to remove, and through the years got lost amongst all the games. So everyone that I've seen like this, only in pictures, has the actual rank of the shooter. But there's also that sort of batter down at the bottom, was your precursor to the flippers. And I also think the catchers up there had some influence on how some of the pinball games later on caught the ball and distributed it. Next, please. But the classic bagatelle during all this period kind of looked like this, and I think this is what most people have seen, or ones that look like this bagatelle, whether you see it with a shooter or not. Next, please. These are some weird games that I picked up from. The one on the left is the early 1900s. I think if you look back, you'll see some bagatelles that kind of resemble that sort of look on the playfield. The bagatelle uses some things that you probably have seen on some of the early pinball games. Next. Here's some other early wood games with the sharp shooter on the side. And that was out of Pittsburgh. There were two companies, Warner Glass and Sharp, that came out of Pittsburgh. And they had a very similar shooter that you saw on the similar game where you could actually see where the ball was. Again, the arcade game, that would be a shooter on it, was kind of spring-loaded, you pulled it back and shot. Next. Here's some other early wood games with that same sort of look. Notice that even there, you see that where those holes were, the five holes, you see them on almost all these games. It just keeps cropping up. Again. Next. Also, we see in the 20s a bunch of kid games coming on. And these particular ones, the baseball game on the right, used two shooters where you had two players to play probably at the same time, together or however they wanted, and it would shoot the ball in a circle. Both of these games were made by the same people, even though the die is just a little bit different, where the holes are on the Mary Pigskin. There actually was a third one created that had a card game, was the what it was, the theme of it. And that one I did not have, but I have seen it. Again, you shoot the ball, it's kind of interesting to play the game, but I believe there's a bunch of games that came out early, pinball games that you see that have that same sort of spin. One that comes to my mind is the Keo Daisy, the square pinball game, where you actually shoot and the ball goes around the circle. Excellent. Yeah, the Brinkman came out. Here again, you see the going around the circle points, and you see a spring-loaded thing that hits some other piece of metal and propels the ball. Next. In 1930s, this is a 1932 game, the Lou Gehrig game. It's a pretty popular game, and it's a game that is today valued in a collector's collection. The shooter was, you placed the ball in there, and the minute you placed the ball, it shot it out of the holder there with a little spring mechanism, and it went out real quick. But you could move the shooter then and place the shoot on the play field. And the one thing that's really neat about this game is, the next slide, please. Look at those five holes again. Look how they look on this 30s game when they get it. It's a baseball game. Also on the sides, there's an outfield. It's kind of like weird to me when I look at this to see how many things actually, the distance between these two things is about 60 to 70 years difference. And you see an awful lot of things look quite a bit alike on them. Next. Now we're getting into that time when many of you probably know who they're about, the Whipple and the Whoopee. Who was first on the market? And these were the two, basically, the bagatelles of them. I have the Whipple, actual Whipple game, but I did not have the actual Whoopee game. But the Whoopee, I think, is a very pretty game as a display. And it also has that look of it that later on you see him coming up with Baffle Ball and several other ones, High Ball, etc. But these were still the home games, the ones that one would see at home. Next. Here we see the Baffle Ball home game. In my estimation, that's probably one, and I don't think Michael's here,
Okay, but I think, to me, that's one of the most well-made games out there, these handheld sort of games. The other one is the pinch hitter that came right after World Series. And the playfield does turn just like the big one. And actually, this little home game is a kind of a nice one to play. It's very entertaining to play. Sometimes I've played it, got one run for the whole game, and then other times I've played it, got like 300 runs, I think. So, but it's a very neat game to play. The baffle ball game, again, is a very well-structured game and a nice one to play. And that particular pattern, too, then once it got going, showed up in an awful lot of games. And we also see, as Dick Duchelle said, Bagatelle, we got pinball, we got Bagatelle. And what we see is now, as these games are starting to hit the market, the big games, actually pinball machines, we see these little home models duplicating what you saw in the bigger machines. Here's a couple of the layout that you know the original games. These are the ones that were the home models of those two games. Next. A couple of other ones. The one on the left kind of comes from New England. And Highball, again, has a file pattern. Next. We see Lindstrom. And Lindstrom's first, I believe, is the Highball. Is that right, Harold? Or Harold? I think he's still in the room. He's an expert on Lindstrom games. And the other one is Steeplechase. Notice how they're all getting the same look as far as with the battle ball look, so to speak. Next. Lindstrom also, five-star final. Wasn't this kind of reminds me of five-star final. I don't know if some of you have that one. It has that look, but they did it different colors to sell it. Next. But we also saw a durable toy come out with that kind of five-star final thing, and colorful fields trying to outdo one another to sell the little Bagatelles or pinball games. Next. In the late 30s, now we see this sort of thing, the Mickey Mouse. This is a highly collectible one, but it was done by two different companies. Marx did it in the United States, and Chad Bell did it in England. The only difference between the two is up at the very top, which you can't see there. It says made by Marx or made by Chad Bell. The only difference between these two names. Next. Here are some little small handheld ones, Bagatelles. Actually, the Bullet Fell on the Side, which is an earlier handheld game, to a puzzle collector, they would say that is not a game, that is a puzzle, period. We've got arguments. Jerry Slocum, who's a puzzle guru in the United States, says it's a puzzle. It's not a game, and it's not a Bagatelle. But you can call it whatever you want. Next. Again, and plus the home St. Louis was Northwestern products. And I think everybody is familiar with these decorating the walls. They're the Bagatelles, which take off on their own little push-em-up sort of look. And the colorful characters to sell their different games. Next. And that basically takes you up to the point where I'm going to leave you because you know the rest of the story, so to speak, is Paul Hardy. You see all the neat games that came in the 30s, and I only saw one today official over there. And there was somebody, I don't know, most of these games include Steve, what's the last name? Cortman. Even he wasn't born before some of these things came about. Is there any questions? And then a few minutes.
So, Bob, how many of these do you have?
Yeah, I guess I got several. Between all of them, I think I have like 800 games in my collection. With them and board games and other things. I really think the baseball games is where I started. I started, my grandmother gave me a baseball game. It was a hustler game that had a little spinner in the back, you press the button and spin. And I played with that for years. And I found out when I talked to Mark Cooper, who's the guru on baseball games, his very first game was a hustler game as well. This is the Chinese Bagatelle. If you want to look at them, they're up here on the table. lots of look down. This is the cuckoo. And this is the red grape. And I do have a singer game right here too.
Is there a reasonable way to clean yourself on that red grape?
I wouldn't touch it with a fine-tooth comb. I do clean some of the games, especially the ones that are really dirty. I use Buckman tar remover that you buy at an auto repair store. Believe it or not, why did they make it for paint on a car? If you think about it, they make it for paint on the car so that it won't destroy the finish. And I tried it on different spots, and it removes, believe it or not, you can wipe it off pretty quick, which you do. That's a nice job. Yes, David.
The Chinese one has shooter lanes on both sides. Do you know the rules around that? Different players play on different sides?
Yeah, you play on different sides, but I was understanding that if you usually they only have the ramp on the right-hand side. If they have a ramp on both sides, then you shoot on both sides. But if you got it in the one on the other side, it was no score. That's what I understood. I'll say that one. The question was, what are the values of some of these games? Well, I think they go up and down, just like everything else. And Dennis and I were talking about pinball games. You never know. One that you think should go for a high amount, it goes for a slow amount, and something else goes up and down. Basically, I think you find a red grape somewhere in the vicinity of around somewhere $200 to $500, $200 to $300, somewhere in that area. A singer game, you probably, in very good condition, you find it less than that. This Bagatelle game, in pristine condition, with all the balls and maybe something else, would go for about $300. Baseball games, I can tell you that the Lou Gehrig game I haven't had there was the actual game that Mark Cooper had in his boat, because he sold it to me, but he would only sell it to me if I bought the prototype of it as well. So it was a pretty expensive game to buy, too, as you can imagine, because I had to buy the prototype. But the Chinese ball one games, they go for a different price, depends upon where you find it. I've spent anywhere from, say, $500 to $600 for a Bagatelle to about $20 or $30 for someone. So, yes?
How about replacement balls? Is there any way to find those anywhere?
Basically, hardly any of the games ever come with the balls.
Right.
So you really have to go, they're all replacements, to be truthful. The clay balls never made it, most of them.
Right.
You can find them, there are people that make new clay balls, or you can find old ones. Any other questions? Thank you.